Thank you all for coming tonight. It's good to see so many people gathered here from all different churches. I'm going to start with an interesting question that is not going to look related at all. Has anyone here ever had fruit soup? Fruit soup. Oh, actually, I was not expecting these hands. This is kind of unhelpful to the illustration. It's fine. So, fruit soup is a bit weird. It's a strange concept. It's somewhere between kind of fruity gravy, kind of custardy maybe, and some of them are a little bit more like liquidy jam. It's an interesting phenomenon. Go and Google it if you ever encounter it. Try it. But the place you're most likely to encounter it, I think, is Hungary, which is certainly where I first encountered it, and that's really what I want to talk about or begin with. Because in 2016 and 2018, I went to Hungary with Scripture Union, total of 5 weeks across the 2 years. I went to help run kids camps, kids Bible camps, to teach Bible stories and also to teach a bit of English. The kind of gimmick for the camps was that we'd be teaching them English, because English teaching in Hungary is not very good. But obviously I was a little bit younger, so it's my longest time away from home, 3 weeks, all on my own in a foreign country with a language that I did not speak. I could probably count to 10. By the end of it, I knew words like fork, exit, and train station, but I did not when I went, and I'm not sure even when I left fork, exit, and train station would have gotten me very far. So in Hungary, I was totally at the mercy of the locals, of all the people who were hosting us. And that is hospitality, which is what I want to talk about. This is working. So on the left there, there's some of the photos from my trip. So I've just arrived. I'm away from home. I can't speak any Hungarian. And I spend my first night in the spare room of a couple from the local church who were involved with Scripture Union Hungary. So we'll see. I am kept from being homeless by their hospitality. Most hospitality in Hungary, as it does in England, involved food. So hence the fruit soup, which is in the top left-hand corner there. And also, I think that's a plate of cake that we're eating on the checkered tablecloth there. There was a lot of cake. There was a lot of bread. They eat a lot of bread. So that was the hospitality. We were fed, I think, about 5 times a day, things that we would normally consider meal-worthy. By these enthusiastic families helping to support the Bible camps, really eager to help support us as the foreign visitors who are helping make them happen. A very eager hospitality. We slept on floors in churches. We occasionally slept with families. And one memorable incident, I suppose I'm calling this hospitality, is when in my first week I was got a mosquito bite. Well, I got many mosquito bites. Apparently, I'm one of those people. But one of my mosquito bites became infected. And I remember one day, I was in the middle of this school hall where we're holding this Bible camp. And there was a group of Hungarian mothers in the corner talking. They were basically only spoke Hungarian. They had only spoken to me before a couple of words of, like, basic things like, how are you? And they're just talking, and they're looking at me, and they're pointing. What's going on? And then one of them comes over to me and kind of like grabs my arm and takes me to the group. I'm like, now what's going on? And they eventually beckon one of the translators over who we'd brought from Budapest. He was like, okay, they think your bite's infected. I'm like, oh, okay, do they? He's like, they're going to take you to the hospital. Okay, so this group of Hungarian mothers organized me a lift. They took me to the local clinic. They like rang the doctor, because it was a very small town, and brought him over to look at my bite. And I had this whole hospital experience, which took place over my head in Hungarian. This, like, Hungarian mother's being like talking to him, then he talked back, and then she talked to him, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And then suddenly my leg was on the bed and being bandaged, and like, I don't know what's going on, but I think it's good. So these mothers, and then they checked on me every day afterwards, like, are you taking your antibiotics? Through a translator, of course. How's your leg? I'm like, okay, it's good, it's good. And they just absolutely took me under their wing as this young English girl who didn't speak Hungarian, didn't know what she was doing, clearly didn't recognize what an infected mosquito bite was. And one of the most memorable things about the experience was that obviously it's all private, the whole healthcare system in Hungary, and they paid for my antibiotics. I didn't realize that they'd done it until afterwards, and I was like, do I need to pay for these? It's like, no. And it was dealt with. And also they paid for the doctor's visit, although that was a bit weird because they paid him in a bottle of wine. I think he considered it a favor to the church or something. It was a very memorable experience, and if I hadn't had that help from those local people who took me under their wing and took care of me in their home, in their place, with all of their skills and abilities, I would have had an infected leg and it would have spread. But instead, I get my leg wrapped up, as you can see in the bottom left-hand corner, and limped for the next 3 weeks before Mum finally got me back. She was very nervous for 3 weeks. So that is the essence of hospitality. It's about welcoming strangers. They didn't know me at all. They didn't speak English. I didn't speak Hungarian. So we'd not even had a conversation. But they brought me into their own space, and they treated me with total respect and total care. Hospitality is a really major thing in the ancient world, which is why I've got these photos on the right-hand side there. In a world without holiday inns, you need locals to take care of you if you're going to travel anywhere. And when travel takes much longer, you've not got any aeroplanes or cars or anything, that hospitality is really, really important. It's so important that in the Greek world, at the very least, it's considered sacred. That picture in the middle, it's actually from a restaurant menu, but it does illustrate Xenios Zeus, which is Zeus the hospitality giver, I suppose. Hospitality is considered sacred to Zeus, king of the gods in Greek mythology. So it's very, very important. And when I studied the Odyssey in my A-level year, it came up all the time. Odysseus, of course, is a traveller. He goes to many, many different places and is always reliant on the locals. So top right, Polyphemus, the Cyclops. He's a very bad host. He's a bad host because he eats his guests. That seems like a given. The story is actually quite strongly about hospitality because they come in and kind of claim their guest right by taking some of his food, and then he reacts by eating them. The suitors, when Odysseus gets home in the bottom right-hand corner, are very bad guests. That's also part of hospitality, is the guest etiquette, because what they're doing is they're trying to steal his wife, they're eating all of his food, and generally have overtaken his entire house, which is why in the climax, he is justified in killing them all. Don't do that either. So yes, when you're on the road, when you're traveling, hospitality is absolutely life-saving, which is why it is sacred and is a much bigger thing in the ancient world than it is now. But hospitality is still fundamentally the same today. It's just not quite as talked about. There are two reasons I want to talk about for why we should be welcoming strangers, people like the homeless, people who are outside. And, of course, I want to argue this from the Bible, not from the Odyssey. and I want to highlight a passage that we actually haven't read yet, which is from Deuteronomy chapter 10. Here we go. Things that are said at the beginning of Deuteronomy are really, really important because they're the logical basis for the whole of the rest of the book, which narrates kind of the essence of the law, the essence of God's relationship with his people. Deuteronomy is also really important as a whole book because it's a speech which comes directly from Moses. It's a summary of the law. And particularly from our New Testament perspective, it's the book that Jesus quotes from when he meets with Satan in the wilderness. So, for the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality and accepts no bribes. He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. So, he defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. We see God's heart for those who are outside, for those who are disadvantaged in some way. And you are to love those who were foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. There's the command, and the reason for the command, encapsulated in that reciprocity, because you were foreigners, so you should love foreigners yourself. So the two reasons that I want to highlight for our care for strangers like the homeless is, number one, because we have been ourselves strangers and foreigners, welcomed in by God. In the same way that Israel was in Egypt and then rescued by God through the Exodus, so we also have been saved from that foreign land of sin. Secondly, we should reach out to strangers because God himself has a heart for them, because God always is rooting for strangers and foreigners, the outcast and the lost. And we are always called to imitate him. These points come very clearly from the readings that we've had today. Luke 5, the calling of Levi, demonstrates that reciprocity of the welcoming and then welcoming yourself. Just as Levi is called by Jesus, so he then welcomes people into the banquet. And secondly, Isaiah 58 illustrates the ferocity of God's heart for the isolated and the foreigner. And how, therefore, hospitality and imitating that becomes worship, that better kind of fasting the passage talks about. So, we'll begin with Luke chapter 5. As Levi is called to follow Jesus, he responds with hospitality to those around him. Jesus calls Levi while he's at his tax booth. He's on the job. "Follow me," Jesus says. And then the response? Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. There we go. That leaving everything is a typical motif throughout the New Testament of good discipleship. In Luke's Gospel, it's just happened a few verses before as Simon Peter, James and John leave their nets in their boats to follow Jesus and become his very first disciples of that Gospel. It's also something that turns up in the other Gospels as well. Levi leaves everything and follows him. He's clearly a good disciple of Jesus. He's responded well. And the first thing he does as a disciple is to hold a great banquet to welcome loads of people in. He wants a celebration to shout out that he's become a disciple. And he wants to celebrate with his friends, his fellow tax collectors. In fact, tax collectors and other guests, which is a group that the Pharisees in verse 30 describe as tax collectors and sinners. Those other guests have become sinners in their mouths. We know that in New Testament times, tax collectors were not well liked. I mean, are they now? But they don't turn up at your house now in the same way they did. In various places in the New Testament, tax collector is synonymous with sinner. Tax collectors were a symbol of the Roman occupation, that the money of the area was going to a foreign power overseas. And therefore, tax collectors and others, or tax collectors and sinners, is a collection of outcasts, of people no one else liked. In order to call someone a sinner, there has to be something about their lifestyle that is recognisably sinful. People whose lifestyles were rejected. In the same way that Levi left everything and followed Jesus, it would have been very easy for him to also leave these people behind. His fellow tax collectors, his fellow outcasts from his previous life. But as Jesus says, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Jesus called Levi while he was an outcast tax collector. He was bundled in with those sinners, so synonymous with that term. And it would be hypocritical of him not to welcome those who are what he once was. It is much like that line we get in the Deuteronomy passage. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. As God calls Israel to hospitality on the basis that they were foreigners in Egypt, so Levi responds to Jesus' call by welcoming tax collectors and sinners to his table, the people that he was once one of. And this doesn't only apply to Levi, because we were all sinners before Jesus called us. As we have been welcomed by him, called with those brilliant words, "Follow me," so we can welcome others into the space that we now have. We were all homeless before God gave us a home. John 14 says, "My Father's house has many rooms. I have gone to prepare a place for you there." We are welcomed into God's home. And likewise, we were all fatherless before God made us his children. John 1 says, Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. It would be hypocritical of us not to welcome those who are what we once were, not to welcome those who are outcast and outside. My second point, we move on to Isaiah 58. God's heart is for strangers and outcasts. So when we welcome people in, it is a form of worship. I'll reread a bit from the passage that was read earlier. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke? To set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away your very own flesh and blood? The thing that really strikes me about this passage is the passion with which it's delivered. Is it not to share your food with the hungry? In fact, it's a kind of grief. That's the tone that I get from it. Grief that the mistreated are being rejected, the oppressed are being abandoned, the hungry are forgotten, and the wanderers neglected. While people fast and give things up, they forget the people on their very own doorsteps. The grief that comes out of Isaiah 58 is really reflected, I think, in the determination with which Jesus proclaims his mission statement in Luke 4. Because that passage is actually a quote from Isaiah 61, very soon afterwards. The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. You see that same passion with which Jesus proclaims that he's here to do something about it? God has always had a heart for the poor. He's always been rooting for the oppressed. He's always searching out the last, the least, and the lost. And worship is our appeal to the heart of God. It's our drawing close to him, our imitation of him. Therefore, when we do as he does, we follow his heart. And that is a much better kind of fasting than abstinence and self-discipline. It's much better to take up something which is a cause of God than to give something up. I'm not saying that's a bad thing by any means, but if we take up, it is much better as we draw close to God and the things that he holds dear. We are, after all, made in the image of God. So what can be greater than to lean into that and to do as God does? Plus, Isaiah promises that when we draw near to God, he will draw near to us. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. Both quotes from the passage that we've just recently read. Both things that we will receive in response for that drawing near to God, that new and better kind of fasting. So God himself is a great host. He's a great welcomer. He brings people in as he has brought us in as those who follow him. His house has many rooms, and he has invited all of us who have been lost sheep to come inside and eat with him in a great banquet. He's even adopted us into his family, which is why we can call him Father. And it is because of God's hospitality that we are called to be welcomers too, that we are called to be great hosts. We are called to eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners, those people that we used to be. We're called to share our food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter. Just as we ourselves have been strangers in Egypt, brought into God's house by Jesus' call, so we must bring strangers into our own house. And by doing as God does, we share his heart for the last, the least, and the lost. And that is true worship and true fasting. I'm going to end with a short prayer. Great God, who has called us into your house through Jesus Christ, may we be great welcomers like you are. Thank you that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us to adopt us into your family. Thank you that in your majesty, your heart is always for the least loved and the most forgotten. May we learn to make our homes open, to welcome outcasts to eat and drink at our table. Give us boldness to forget the awkwardness and inconvenience of hosting, and hearts which follow your heart in love for those who most need your love. Amen.